Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome back to the program today Lisa Scottolini. She joins us by telephone from somewhere out in eastern Pennsylvania. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, I'm so happy to be back. I wish you were out there in person.
You know, it's been too long, Lisa. I think it's been about 12 years. And
I know.
In the meantime, you've been writing a lot of books.
I surely have. I was doing one a year, but that was in the olden days. Now I do two a year. Actually, I do three a year.
Yeah, I heard you're moving it up to three.
Yeah, baby.
And you've got these books that you're writing with your daughter now?
Mm-hmm. Well, I really, you know, I always sort of secretly want to have more women's voices in the world, because the world does not hear us as much as it should. And so the books of my daughter are kind of nonfiction memoir. They're mother-daughter, kind of like, they hark back to Irma Bombeck, if you remember her. I sort of love those, just images of the family, but funny. And then the rest of the year I'm writing thrillers and murder, so it's kind of a yin and yang.
Well, I'm sure you know that Irma was the pride of Dayton, Ohio.
Of course I know that.
So a lot of people around here loved Irma.
Well, Irma's amazing, and she still is amazing, and I still look at those books sometimes and just laugh and laugh. There hasn't been anyone like her. No one. And she was so far ahead of her time. You know, it just, because the point is, we as women, and men too, but I mean, we're aware that there is a larger world, but the thing that really concerns us at bottom is I always think of breakfast table for some reason, because although I always had a house where it was just me and my daughter, actually, I'm a single mom, but we always sat down at meals together. But right now her drain is clogged. I'm concerned about that because she has to have a guy come in, and I'm always afraid a girl alone in an apartment. You know, we can multitask, but at heart, it really is about family, and that's what Irma was about.
Okay, so you just mentioned that you think that there need to be more women's voices, and yet here you've written a new book called Don't Go, and it's written from the viewpoint of a man.
It is. I'm trying to branch out. After two unsuccessful marriages, I'm trying. Well, sort of what happened is it's been 20 years of writing with women main characters. And sort of, if you look at it, I can do the thumbnail, is that I kind of started out saying, gee, I really have a lot of strong, independent, funny women in my life. Why are we always second banana in fiction? So I said, all right, I'm going to write a bunch of books that have women that are in control in varying degrees of their life. And then what sort of happened is I became a mother, and it sort of defined me so much and still does, even though my daughter is, you know, in her 20s now, that I started to think about what is a mother, and then I started to think about what is a parent. And secretly, I think I've always sort of wondered, how are men and women different? How do those differences, if they exist, express themselves in their personal lives and their professional lives? So I think I've always sort of been exploring that. And I honestly was a little afraid to write a whole book from a male point of view. I mean, I've certainly had male, you know, minor characters. But I said, just look, you got to try. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the point of trying to grow. I don't want to say as an artist, but I do mean that. I think writing, you know, really matters. The arts matter, and they connect us. And I want to explore the full breadth of what it is to write in all different things. And of course, I have little dogs in the background that are horrible, but I'll set them down.
They are so sweet. I see them on your Facebook page. You love posting photos of them.
I do. I know. I can't help myself. And it's terrible, but that's the thing that that's what my life is about. I'm reading, I'm writing, I'm researching, and I'm hanging with dogs, cats, chickens, and a pony. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that your Facebook page is real, and mine is, I do all the posting, I answer all my own email, I do everything, which I think is, you know, as it should be, and sort of great, honestly. I feel very grateful that people come to the page, and so it's all real. It's my real life.
I know you do, because I posted a kind of a snarky comment on there the other day, and and you immediately replied. Of course, it was just the title of your book. Don't Go.
It wasn't snarky. I thought it was cute.
I was just teasing you, because we were working on booking this interview. My guess is Lisa Scottolini. What kind of dogs are those anyway?
Well, I used to have Goldens, and sadly they passed away. But these are, I have a Corgi, and I have some Cavalier King Charles Spaniels.
Those are the ones you're always taking pictures of.
Yeah, they're like Goldens, only smaller.
Are those the ones that are always in the old paintings?
Yeah, they kind of are. They've been around for a long time. They're called Comfort Spaniels, and they're very comforting. They're very lazy. People on Facebook write me and go, your dogs are kind of boring. I'm like, yeah.
Okay, we need to talk about the story, but I'm a little worried because I don't want to spoil it, and there are so many potential spoilers here. I think we can talk about the beginning, can't we? Because you set it all up at the beginning. We can talk about it a little bit.
Right, we sure can.
Okay, well, so tell us what happens without giving anything away.
Well, yeah, I mean, because I did work hard in these twisty turnies, but the beginning starts with a woman, unfortunately, a young mother dying in her house, and it looks like a household accident. But we find out at the end of the chapter that someone came upon her in extremis and let her die. And so the next scene is about her husband, who's serving in Afghanistan, an army surgeon, and he's learning about her death. And so the book really is about, at bottom, it's really about what is a man. It's about what is a father. What is a hero? What does it mean to be a hero in wartime? And that sometimes the real courage is not only confined to a war zone, but can also be just the courage of somebody coming home to essentially solve what turns out to be, well, the circumstances of his wife's death, and in order, and also to raise a young baby that he doesn't even know, a little girl. That's the book in a nutshell.
The book is Don't Go. Lisa Scottolini wrote it, and she is going to be in our area for a book signing coming up. We're taping this before the book actually came out. We're taping this in March. She will be at Books & Company in Dayton for a book signing, and that's Monday, April 15th at 7 o'clock. You can come out and see Lisa. I know that you have a lot of readers in this area, and I got to say, I can't remember ever reading a book where the hero was a podiatrist.
Well, you know, that's really integral to who he is. I mean, to me, it's always about people. I mean, that's why when I saw your Facebook post, I'm like, Vic, yay! I mean, you know, Books & Company, Sharon Kelly Roth and her late husband, but actually they've been to my house. I mean, people matter. Characters matter. And whenever you're kind of fleshing out a character, you go, all right, what kind of job would this person have? Because what I like about this character is that he isn't an alpha guy. He is very acutely aware that he is not top of the food chain in his world. His good buddy kind of is. But he's a little bit of a beta guy. You know, he's wonderful. But part of his task, because, you know, I'm sure, at least my research revealed, that even men are insecure sometimes. And his sort of, I hate to say journey, but I have to say journey. But his task, I always think about, do characters, what is their problem and how do they need to solve it? What do they need to overcome in themselves? And in his, it's that he needs to kind of be stronger. He needs to assert himself. He needs to believe in himself more than he does. And to me, when I did my research on not only surgeons but army surgeons, it was interesting because podiatrists in the world of orthopedics are not like thought of, even though it's a superb. I mean, they're really smart people, same as every other surgeon. But it's not a prestige specialty. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And I put in the book a lot of jokes that they all make about podiatrists. But interestingly, war, as it does in so many other examples, turns everything on its head. And especially in these wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, podiatrists have become increasingly in demand because, unfortunately, in addition to brain trauma, the signature wound of these conflicts is wounds to the lower extremities. And so all of a sudden, the podiatrist is the MVP. And that's an interesting twist for our character as well. So it kind of works, I hope, in the novel that he's a podiatrist.
And I'm assuming a lot of these wounds to the lower area are caused by explosive devices.
Exactly, right? IEDs, stepping on things, driving over things.
Right.
It's horrifying. The research was heartbreaking because the reality is heartbreaking.
You just mentioned that you think that men feel insecure. And sure, that's true. I think all of us feel insecurity, especially in this crazy world we live in. And I think that your title really goes to the heart of that, because when you say don't go, I mean, this covers so many different things. And it's really all about fear of abandonment, you know, whether it's being afraid that your spouse is going to leave you, or that you're not going to have social security when you get old, or your kids are going to put you in a rest home and they're never going to come and see you. You know, whatever those fears might be, whether it's your father walking out the door and never coming back again.
Yeah.
You know, that's real.
Yeah. Well, that's, I appreciate you saying that, because I really try to get a resonant title, and titles don't always come easily to me, but this one did on so many levels, you know, and not only the literal level of that, is even, you know, back when the conflict began in Afghanistan and Iraq, you know, there wasn't anybody who really wanted their sons or their daughters to go to war. And that's what I think is sort of interesting about, if I may say, about the book, too, that it's really a book that occurs and could only occur at the end of a war, you know, at the end of these conflicts, because I think there's a special poignance to this phase of the world, these wars, that people... Take Afghanistan, for example. We are getting out. We have dates. We have timetables. Many people have gotten out and been sent home, and that's wonderful. But there are still people there, and they're dying every day. And even if you believed in the cause initially, it's hard to believe in it. It's hard to understand why that's still happening, especially to a family to whom it happens. So it's kind of, it's heartbreaking, really. And my research showed that the people who are serving, as much as they believe in their jobs and work and sacrifice for all of us, feel that irony. And I think it underpins this novel as well.
Lisa Scottolini joins us. Her new novel is Don't Go. And is this the first one you've written from the male perspective?
Yes. I've written short stories. I've been nervous. I mean, I just be upfront with you. Okay. I thought, I don't know if you can sustain it for longer than a short story, and I've done short stories for charity. Usually it's like there was a breast cancer one and for the Nature Conservancy. And I was like, all right, well, you're not getting paid anything for it. So take a shot. This is your time to get your foot in the water.
Okay.
But then I think when you start to, you know, 20 years later, you go, listen, I've got to take... I always like to keep it fresh. You know, whether it's the Rosado series, which is a series about women lawyers and their relationships, or the standalones, which are more emotional and just also thrillers, but more with a family emphasis, as opposed to the Rosado, which is more a thriller with a little family subplot. I have to keep it fresh for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't write with an outline. I mean, so everything is really new, and Don't Go is part of that. Let's see if you can do this. And the truth is, I'm working on a novel, the next standalone novel that will be out next year, and it also is a male main character, because it was fun and it was interesting, and I get to think for about 400 pages about the differences between the genders and what difference that makes.
Well, I must say that reading this one, without giving anything away, as I turn the pages faster and faster into the night, I kept saying, this poor schlub, what is Lisa going to do to him now?
I know. The poor guy, he goes through hell. But the weird thing is, I don't know, maybe as I've gotten older, I have a great appreciation for how many things can go wrong all at once. It's a funny thing. I have a friend who, right? Her mom's very ill. Her kid just broke her leg. And she, sadly, just discovered she has a breast lump. Now, I got to tell you, that's not atypical. You know, especially when you're middle-aged, you know, when you have responsibilities, it always seems like when it rains, it's true in my life, too. I mean, without going into boring detail, but my last book tour, I canceled because my mother, God bless her, she's fine, we thought we were going to lose her, canceled the book tour. At the same time, my daughter got robbed. Her apartment was robbed.
Hmm.
And so... You know, you have three generations exploding with bad news. And so I thought, you know, it just seems like that's real life. I think your point that you made earlier, life is a little tougher these days. I feel it. And it's partly the economy and it's partly the national mood. And so I want the fiction to reflect that.
Mm.
It has to be powerful.
Yeah. Well, you certainly hit the hot buttons in this one, and at one point, I'm not going to say who it is, but someone's going online and they're wanting to read emails by someone who is dead, and they want to find out some things, and we're getting into some pretty touchy ethical stuff here, aren't we? When is it appropriate to read emails like that? I mean,
yeah,
it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It really does, and you're right to see the question in it. It's an interesting thing because, you know, I hope I write page turners. I like to think of them as, you know, they keep you moving in thrillers. But the fact is that technology is so pervasive in our life that sooner or later, like, you can't avoid having a character sit in front of a computer, which I have to tell you as a writer dramatically sucks. It's very boring, right?
Yeah.
Nobody wants to read, and then I logged into Google and I put in, or even the reading of email. But I sort of did want to raise that because the question is, I like the resonance even in the larger political context. You know, we talk a lot about transparency and what is disclosed. And on a national level, we're all for that, with some limits that are kind of limbed by national security.
Uh-huh.
But then when you're sitting down at a computer and you want to know what's going on in your house that you might have not known about,
yeah.
The privacy interest goes right out the window. And it's sort of interesting because this is the second book I've written in wartime. I wrote a previous novel called Killer Smile, which was set at a time during it was set in the present, but it was concerned the internment of Italian Americans during World War II. And those times always have as set against each other the interest in individual liberties versus national security or security of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
And we become really warped about that. You know, I tend to believe very, you know, put paramount privacy interests, except when I'm getting on a plane,
uh-huh.
right? And then I want everybody, like, strip searched. Like, I don't care what you make me stand in front of, and I don't care what anybody, you know what I mean? Look,
uh-huh.
see. They're looking at your underwire of your bra. Sorry to be so graphic, but I'm always thinking, oh, my God, look at that bra. That looks horrible. You know?
Yeah. See that really good-looking guy over there? Strip him. Search him.
Yes. Come here, sir.
Okay. Lisa Scottolini joins us. And I know you've never tried to figure out a password so you could snoop an email, but the emails in this one are not boring. As I was reading the emails that this individual discovers, I'm saying to myself, book clubs all over America are going to be buzzing about this stuff.
Well, you're nice to say so. I think book clubs have really found me, which is wonderful. I like when anybody finds me because I believe in books and reading. I think, you know, we do so many things like get on steppers or try to eat healthy, and we sometimes overlook that reading nurtures us too. I mean, it's just a way to feed your soul. But anyway, I'm glad the emails are interesting enough, and I think that... you know, you really hope the book club. I have a book club party at my house every year. I have 700 people over 2 days. It's a funny event and great.
Hmm.
But any book club meeting, because I've been to a few, you know, the first 3 minutes are about the book, and then the next 45 minutes are my husband, my dog, my grandchildren, and not in a way that is not unrelated to the book. Now that's a double negative. What I'm trying to say is, the art makes people think about their own lives. Think about, have I snooped? Is it okay to snoop on your kid? How is that different from snooping on your husband? How is that different from snooping on your neighbor?
Uh-huh.
Or your ex-husband? Or somebody you think might be, preying on your children on the internet? Or your teenage daughter on the internet?
Mm.
So, I mean, I really want people to relate these things to their own lives.
Lisa Scottolini joins us. Her new novel is Don't Go, and you probably might want to go see her. She'll be in Dayton, and that is on Monday, April 15th. She'll be at Books & Company at the Green at 7 o'clock for a book signing. And I saw a thing that you taped for the New York Times a year or two ago where you were talking about how Edgar Allan Poe was really the one that sort of created the thriller genre just by the way that he wrote. And I'm wondering if you have any other thoughts you'd like to share about that.
Well, I think the coolest thing that Poe did is to really plumb identity. I mean, I've written books. I think a lot about identity. I've written books that are completely about identity, mistaken identity, double identity. I found out late in life that I have a sister that I didn't know about. It sort of put into relief how much is nature, how much is nurture. And, like, if you think about Poe and his story, William Winslow, which I think is probably pretty well known, you know, you find out that this guy's obsessed with somebody in his school class, and it turns out that that's, well, this is my interpretation of the ending anyway, himself. And it's so important to me as a writer because I'm always, because of the character thing. If you're going to say to me, what is the one ingredient that makes people care about a book, which means they're turning the pages. I mean, it's that you care about the person who is in trouble. And for me, when I read other people's thrillers or any kind of situation, you go, I care about that person. I want to see how they get out of this situation. And there's a little pep talk for me because I'm insecure. So I kind of want to know, is she going to get out of this? How is she going to get out of it? How can she get herself out of it? I mean, I've never done damsel in distress. Nobody rescues you in this world, and no one knows that better than a single mother. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I've been lucky and happy in my life. But it's really a good thing to know that you're on your own, and you can do it.
Yeah. I also remember in that piece that you did for the New York Times where you pull a book, you're in a bookstore and you pull a book off the shelf by James Patterson and you talk about why you love his work and how much you love him and you say, I read everything he does. And I thought to myself, well, the guy puts out a book every 3 minutes. That would be a full-time job.
Right, that was then. I read the Alex Cross. I try to keep up with Alex Cross.
Okay.
But it's like you can learn something from everything and every genre. You know, Patterson's great strength is plotting. And I have to tell you, there's lots of people whose writing is more lauded, but can't make a story go. And if you can't make a story go, I don't want to read it. I'm not going to read it.
Uh-huh.
And like Lawrence Block, the wonderful writer, said, you know, when he turned 40, he gave himself permission to not finish a book. And I'm like, that's very freeing. Because then you start feeling your life, it's like you're eating good food instead of bad food. You know, eat this, not that, read this, not that. And I start to read, I just thought of that. I think it's kind of true. So you kind of are always reading stuff, seeing what you learn from it, seeing what works at one doesn't, and processing it yourself to make your own fiction and nonfiction better. In my case, I really try to improve. I mean, I really do.
And you've put us around the circle again, mentioning Lawrence Block. Larry Block did attend Antioch College. He didn't graduate. He left and went off into the world of fiction. But he's been on this program a couple of times. And of course,
I didn't know that. Isn't he great? I mean, I don't know him personally. I met him once, but I think he's a wonderful writer.
We're on the Antioch radio station, and here you mention Lawrence Block. We keep going around in circles.
Look at this!
Yeah. The book is Don't Go. Lisa Scottolini wrote it, and I think the last time I saw you was at the Book Expo conference in New York. I walked around a corner, and there you were with your daughter, and you were getting ready to tape some glitzy TV interview. And you gave me a quick hug. And
I always hug you when I
see you. It was one of those classic Scottolini hugs.
You're super hot. I wonder if your listeners know that.
You know,
I'm no dummy.
Years ago, we had an open house at the station, and a woman came up to me, and she said, are you Vic McCunis? And I said, yeah, I'm Vic McCunis. And she said, you can't be Vic McCunis. She said, on the radio, you sound so short. and I do
how do you respond to that?
I do remember the last time that you were here, and you did an event in Dayton, and you came in and did a live interview in the studio, and then we were chatting about music and the music that you love. And then I remember a couple days later, I got a package in the mail with a couple of Frank Sinatra albums in it that you sent me, and that was just about the sweetest thing I think anyone's ever done.
Oh, how nice of you. You're so sweet. Well, I love talking to you, and I love Sinatra. This seems like a natural thing.
Well, I was touched. I really was. And we're really glad that you're coming back through town. How long has it been since you've been through Dayton? Do you remember?
I don't even know. It's been way too long. I used to go there regularly to Books & Co., but unfortunately you're not you're not completely your own boss when you're published, but I've begged to go back, and I'm glad I'm going back, and meet me for a drink if you can.
Okay. Well, you know, this is a real page-turner, as usual, and you kind of gave a clue to our listeners a little while ago when you used the term that this woman was found in extremis. You come from a background as a litigator. You were a lawyer for a while, and then you started writing about the law, and we have some great courtroom scenes in this new book.
Yeah, I mean, I got to do it. I like the law. I like when legal stuff happens because I always like to write about these issues of justice. And that's all law stuff's really about, right and wrong. I taught a course at Penn Law School called Justice in Fiction, which I invented. And it was really just about examining moral choices and deciding if that's the same thing as an ethical choice or a legal choice. You know, the idea in novels, you're always sort of thinking, what's the right thing to do? And how is that different from the legal thing to do? And where do law and justice, you know, we used to think law always led to justice. When does it disconnect, or when does it even thwart justice, which unfortunately happens more and more? So I kind of like that, and I hope this courtroom scene worked. It's sort of fun to just get back in and go, aha, because I always win in the fiction. Like, right? If I'm the lawyer, believe.
Uh-huh. Well, it's been too long, and it's really been a treat having you back on the program.
Well, I feel the same way, and I can't wait to see you.
The book is Don't Go by Lisa Scottolini. You can see her. She'll be at Books & Company Monday night, April 15th at 7 o'clock at the Green for a book signing. And I just have one more quick question. I know you're a big fan of Mario Puzo's The Godfather. Have you read any of the sequels, and what did you think?
You know what? I bought them out of loyalty to the estate, but I haven't read them yet. And someday I will. But I just would rather watch The Godfather 3 million times, and I actually taught it in my course. And I think I made those kids see that it was really, you know, it's more than just a mafia story. It's Shakespearean, really. How's that?
Those Italian writers, I'll tell you.
A lot of flavor.
Have you read any of Camilleri's stuff?
No, okay. No. But I bought those as well.
Okay.
I know I have a big to be read pile. I have to stop writing. I can read more.
Well, first you have to read all those Patterson books, and you're falling behind because
I am falling way behind. Please, there's probably three out as we spoke.
Yeah, you're right. I think you put out three more books during this interview. Well, thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you, Vic.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. The book is Don't Go. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes. Last year, Frank Bill delivered his first book, Crimes in Southern Indiana, a collection of short stories that was really an impressive debut. And he's just published his first novel, and it is a knockout punch of literary pugilism. It's called Donnybrook. Tune in next week for Frank Bill in The Book Nook. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.